Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Cinema Catch-Up Club, the podcast for films that you probably should have seen by now. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen B. Platt. Thank you very much for downloading this week's episode. And this week, it's International Women's Day, the following week. We're a dollar late, but never a dollar short, if that's the saying. We are marking this year's International Women's Day with a film that is either by women, for women, or focuses on women. And this year, we're watching a film that is turning 30 years old. It is 1994's Little Women.
Yay.
Joining me, as always, we have someone who has seen the film before and someone who has not. Our guest who has not seen the film before, it's Dr. Sarah Curtis.
How are you, Doctor? Well, I'm quite well, Doctor.
Things are good in the life of Sarah?
Yeah, I feel like I haven't been on for a while.
Well, there was that SAG-AFTRA strike that really stopped me getting guests over for a while.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yes. But you've been well since the middle of last year?
Yeah, you know, well as always, super busy.
Excellent. Little Women.
Yeah.
You've not seen this film.
Strangely, this is the one I've missed.
Yes, because the thing is I know that you are well-versed in these Little Women, in that you have seen... You've claimed to have seen every other adaptation.
I'm pretty sure I have, because there's the most recent film. Mm-hmm. There was a mini-series around the same time.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think there was another mini-series at some point.
I'm just going to nod and go yes.
Plus the book.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes, so you've read the book as well.
I have read the book.
Excellent.
In fact, I read the book on the beach when we all went away. A couple of years back.
Oh, okay.
Not to New Zealand, to down south.
Oh, that time. We've been on so many holidays. I suppose this is an odd question then. You know what the story is.
I do.
But you haven't seen this specific version. So what are you expecting from this version?
I hear this is the definitive version.
Oh, okay.
Rather like the 95 Pride and Prejudice. So I'm, you know, wondering whether this is correct.
So we're going to be selling Winona Ryder's wet shirt in an auction in a couple of weeks.
I guess we'll find out.
Thousands of pounds. We'll wait and see. Well, luckily for us, we do have someone who has seen the film.
Yes.
And returning to the program... for her 70th episode, what? I worked out the other day.
Aww.
Yep.
You're going to leave me on my 70th? No.
Well, in fairness, the only reason that we're going to have to slow down is because you're having a baby.
I mean, whose fault is that? Yours, technically.
Yes,
but
I
anyway.
Suppose. Collectively. It's Dr. Ellen Sears.
Hello.
Yes, welcome, welcome.
Hi.
Obviously, you were on recently.
Yes, I was on last week.
For our Oscars episode. Still tracking well?
Yeah, still tracking well.
Just excellent.
Very, very pregnant.
Yes, yes. That continues to be the case.
Yes.
Little Women.
Yes.
You have seen this film.
I have.
In a vague, non-spoilery sort of way, what's Little Women about?
I guess this is more for like the listeners than anybody else.
Well, I've never seen
it. Yeah, no, you haven't seen it.
Did you see the play?
No.
Because there was a play that we saw like 10 years ago.
No.
Yeah.
So my only exposure to Little Women is that scene in The Simpsons where Mo is finishing reading a storybook to people at the homeless shelter. Going,
oh, yeah.
They realized they weren't little girls anymore. They were little women. That is it. That is my entire exposure to Little Women.
So what should Stephen know for this film?
Really good cast. This version of it... I can understand why people call it kind of the definitive version. I think there was a lot of really good, like, literary adaptations in the 90s. Like, I'm thinking of, like, obviously you mentioned Pride and Prejudice, but, like, not that it was the most faithful in terms of stuff, but A Little Princess, The Secret Garden, like, a lot of
Persuasion,
those...
Persuasion.
Yeah.
Like Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there were a lot of very female-led period pieces that they made into films in the 90s, and they're very, I guess, kind of traditional in the way that they are telling the stories, but they're really good. Like, this is a real sort of comfort film, I guess, because this is something that I taped off the TV and watched like a million times. The cast is all really, really excellent. I'm interested to see what you think of it, Sarah, specifically because you and I watched the Greta Gerwig one last year because I hadn't seen it. And the way that is structured is quite different to this, and the script and the performances are quite different. So
I assume this one's more chronological then.
Yeah. 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 It's a lot more traditional in the way that it's kind of set out. But yeah, basically the only thing you need to know, Stephen, is that it's about a family with a bunch of girls growing up in the Civil War era. In America.
Oh, in America. Okay, sorry. It was like, it's been a lot of civil
in New
wars.
England, specifically.
Okay. So it's American Pride and Prejudice.
Kind of, yeah.
There are elements. It's more...
It's a bit further along.
Focused on the sisterhood than the romance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Fair like, enough. That's all part and parcel of it. Like, so there's aspects of that.
The Bennett sisterhood of the traveling pants. Would that be...
Yeah, basically.
Yeah,
okay.
Kind of.
Okay, cool. I know where we are.
Yeah, kind of. It's all right. Yeah, really, really good cast, though.
Okay, well...
Yeah, this is the one where there's always like, oh, he should have ended up with this sister, not that sister. Like, right. You know, there's the great debate, which I have opinions about.
Okay, well, shall we get into it then?
Yeah,
let's find
out.
Okay, for those of you listening at home, pop in those DVDs, load up those streaming services, and try and be what he loves to call me, a little woman. But do not be rough and wild, and do your duty here instead of wanting to be somewhere else. Because we're going to watch Little Women.
What a quote. Directly from the book?
Yep.
Good man.
And welcome back, everybody. We have just finished watching Little Women from 1994. I'm joined once again by my special guests, Dr. Sarah Curtis.
Where are the men?
And Dr. Ellen Sears.
Hello.
Team pilot reunion.
Yay!
Dr. Sarah.
Yes.
That was your first time watching Little Women from 1994.
That is correct.
What did you think of this adaptation?
I quite enjoyed it, but I'm also glad that I'm watching it now and not around the time it came out. I don't think I'd have appreciated it then.
Well, you'd have been
two. You were two. Okay, come at me. But, you know, in the 90s.
Yeah.
I think 90s Sarah would have got super mad about the title, Little Women, because we ain't little. Like, that's diminutive and I don't like that.
You say this as a... rather small statured lady, if I may say so.
I am a little woman, yes.
And also, at the time, you would have been a very small little girl.
Yeah, and do you know how many people said that to me?
Enough that you had a complex.
Yes, I did.
I still have small, tiny, angry lady syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, we know this.
No, it's a problem. Stop belittling the little women, everybody.
Yeah.
I was super mad about that sort of shit to the point where anything that was targeted towards girls, I refuse to watch or interact with.
Oh, yeah. So even beyond the, like, I don't want to wear pink. Like...
Yeah, I never wore pink.
Okay.
Like, 100% pink, purple, anything girly, floral, nah. Get it, lace, get it away from me. Barbie, do not.
Yeah.
So pink I did, ruffles I did not
do. I despised ruffles.
And part of the reason was because I hit a point where, and because I was really small for my age, people thought I was younger than I was. And I was friends with people who were technically younger than me, but who looked older and looked more mature, because I've just got like a little potato face and big round googly eyes. And so I look a lot younger than what my actual age is. So,
yeah. See, I was borrowing clothes from my cousin who was 2 years younger than me.
Oh boy. Yeah.
So Ellen, you were basically Amy in the first half of this film.
Kind of. Yeah. A little bit.
Just like, I want to go to the theater. Why can't I go?
A little bit of that. It was more like, okay, I mean, a really good example of this is when I did my first play when I was the year I turned 12. So I was in my final year of primary school at that point, because it was before they swapped it around in Western Australia where year 7 was high school.
I had both.
Yeah. I was in a children's theatre troupe for the year, which used to run here in Perth, which was such an amazing opportunity to be a part of. But the character that I was playing was a little goody two shoes. They were all at an explorer party at somebody's house because they'd wanted to do an explorer dress up day at school and they weren't allowed to. And so my character had dressed up as Lady Jane Franklin, who was, her husband, she was a cartographer in Tasmania back in ye olden days.
Yeah.
And so I was wearing this very ruffled, fluffy lace dress with a bonnet.
Who would put Ellen in a bonnet?
Well, here's the thing. I've worn a bonnet as an adult.
As all the dolls we keep casting
as. All the dolls that I keep being cast as. And as an adult, I am like, you know, confident enough in my shit that I'm like, I'm a grown woman. I can wear a bonnet if I want. I don't care. But when I got given my costume for this play, right? And like in hindsight, it's a really nice dress. It's a bit frippery, but it's nice. And it's kind of the era. the other girl who got a costume that day was dressed up as a psychologist or a psychiatrist. She didn't really know the difference, the character. And so she had this very severe 80s, like gray pinstripe suit with huge, massive shoulder pads. Mm-hmm. And she came out and all the other kids who were in the performance troupe looked at her costume and went, oh, wow, yeah, that really suits her character. And then they turned to me and they went, oh, she looks like a China doll. And I promptly threatened to hit a bunch of people in the face because I was really mad because I didn't want to be a cute little China doll. And don't you dare call me that. I was really mad and was ready to throw hands.
So what I'm getting from this is we need to cast Ellen once again as a doll.
But here's the thing. As an adult, I have absolutely no issues with being cast as a doll and doing cutesy bootsy roles.
And I think that's
12-year-old Ellen.
That's what I was growth. Getting at with my previous comment about, yeah, you know, 90s era Sarah would not have appreciated this film. Like stuff like Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah.
Which is a series that someone told me I should read when I was 12 and I refused. Because it sounded like it was a cutesy girly thing. I love that series now, and I have every single book, and they're great.
Right.
So yeah, the older I get, the more I appreciate things that are considered super, super girly and romantic feminine, and
all the stuff.
Well, how was it for you revisiting this then?
I love this film. Yeah. So it came out in 94, and I don't know when we taped it off the TV, but I would say it would have been late 90s. Like probably, I'm guessing like 97, 98.
What were the ads like? Which ads were they? Like,
I don't remember. We do still have the VHS tape at my parents' house. So I could dig it up and I could go have a look.
Mm. What channel was it? Did they have any of those like Channel 7, Rainbow?
No, it wouldn't have been that late. It was before that. So it would have been like mid to like, I'm going to guess probably around like 97-ish.
Okay.
Which means that I would have been
8, 9.
Like 8, 9. Yeah. So, but I really enjoyed it. And I don't remember why we taped it off the TV, whether it was something that mum was like, oh, like we should do, like she did that with lots of stuff. Like she did that with the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And my brother and I sat down and watched it and went, what the was that, mum? Why did you think we should watch this? What?
Because it's a classic.
You were a bit older than 8 and 9 when that happened.
I was older at that point. I just want to point that one out. Yeah. But like, and now, like I love Rocky Horror, but that first viewing, I was like, what is this?
And also starred Susan Sarandon, just saying.
Yeah, no, I know. It's great. But yeah, I don't remember why we taped it off the TV or like what the go was there, but I just remember we had it on VHS. And so I watched it like all the time because I just really liked it.
Mm. Yeah. This, again, as we heard before, this was not only my first time watching this, my first time with any exposure to Little Women ever.
Which was hilarious because he kept making predictions
about what was going to happen. He's like, oh, the mum's going to die.
Yeah.
Mum's going to die. And then he was like, oh, no. Beth's gonna die.
I was right. One of the sisters was gonna die.
Hashtag Beth dies. Hashtag Beth dies.
But I mean, I was genuinely surprised she called the book Little Women.
She didn't.
No, the
publisher did.
Well, okay, sorry. The book was called
Little Women. Within the book.
Yeah, the book within the book was called Little Women. That did genuinely surprise me. And then I was like, oh, that shouldn't be such a big surprise. but it was.
You didn't see the play Women, did you, when it was on?
No, and I didn't see Stuart Little either, which I
presume. No, at the university.
No, I didn't.
Because Dimmick did it.
That's great.
Yeah, I did the choreography for it. And that was like a more postmodern take on that text.
Yes, no, but as I said previously, my only exposure to Little Women was Mao Szyslak in The Simpsons. And I really enjoyed this. I thought this was great. And particularly once we got into the 4 years later when they'd grown up a bit. I love the groundwork that's set in the first half, but I particularly enjoyed it once it was a little bit more complicated and all the different relationships
were
happening.
Leaving and we're moving around and like, how do you navigate that?
It's a really...
It's a coming of age story, but it's not a traditional coming of age story in terms of like, normally a coming of age is like there's one main person that you're following and you're really, really following them. I mean, like obviously there's a main character here because it's Jo because she's the self-insert really.
Mm.
But all the characters are given a lot of time to do stuff because they're like a unit.
I kept coming back to Pride and Prejudice because it is quite similar in a lot of its...
Just different era, yeah.
Yeah, it's a family of predominantly young ladies who are now entering into a world where it's like, oh boy, marriage is your best prospect. But whereas in Pride and Prejudice, again, because it's an earlier time, they're like, well, yes, marriage is our best prospect. It did feel like that there was more of an opinion from not only... I keep wanting to call them the Little Women, but the March sisters, but also their mum.
Oh, yeah.
The parents.
There was very much an opinion of like, you should be able to do more in the world, and we're going to have to fight all our lives to make this happen. And
yeah, it's a lot Mami, more of a feminist yeah. text. Mami is so good. She, like, you look at, we, like, you look at Mrs. Bennett, yeah. and you look at Mami, and you're like, yeah. hell yeah, Mami.
It's almost like same principle, yeah, but the key difference is the mums are polar opposites yeah. in their attitudes.
One yeah. of them has nerves.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought Mami. That's great. Why I thought Mami might die at the halfway point, just because I thought she
oh,
is.
Oh no, we can't keep a strong woman around.
Not so much.
They're
going
to kill her.
She's such like the cornerstone of the family, yeah, and that would be the hugely. Catalyst for the girls to either sink or swim. To then, you know, be.
I think that's one of the problems of this adaptation, though. Mm. And it's the pitfall of a lot of adaptations is Beth.
Yeah.
A lot of them struggle to portray Beth in any particular way. She's always in the background because, as a character, she's an introvert, she's scared, she's shy, she's sick.
She's Mary from Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, yeah. Except, you know, even more sort of introverted. And when you don't focus on her and her relationship with Joe, because she's Joe's favorite sister, like they are the closest, they share a bedroom.
Yeah.
Like in... Yeah. You know, in the book and other adaptations, you see them at the beach together.
Mm.
It's this really tight-knit relationship. When you don't do all that groundwork with that particular relationship, you don't really have that sense of where it's going. There is still a sense of loss when she dies, but it's not quite as devastating, I think.
Yeah, there could have been a bigger impact on it. Because, the death of Beth is kind of the big inciting incident for the conclusion of the film.
Yeah, but everybody all comes back together again.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the reason why I like this is there wasn't actually that much drama in the sense of, like, there wasn't a lot of teacup throwing or anything like that, really.
No.
You have the incident where Amy burns the manuscript when she's younger.
Yeah.
And Joe, rightly so, threatens to kill her. I am 100% with Joe on
the writing issue.
Yeah.
She's just a cranky little kid, and she's not thinking through because her frontal cortex isn't like properly developed yet,
and
she's
it never will be.
And she's just like, you know, you're being bossy, and you know, I've been a younger sibling.
I think it's an older sibling.
I'm also a younger sibling.
Yeah, but did your brother ever like torture you like that?
Have you met my brother?
Yes.
We used to play army games. As kids, like when everyone else
were you a willing participant in them?
Yeah, he wasn't though.
Oh, that surprises me. Considering which one of you ended up in the military.
In the army. No, like he wanted to play army games. Like there was like a gang of us on the street.
Right.
The rest were all boys. Mm-hmm. And then there was the annoying younger sister. And they would go do their thing and I would be the one following along. But like, I want to play as well. And does that mean I'm like the lowest ranking person in the army? Okay, I'll use my cuteness when we battle against the teenagers in the next street over and start throwing shit at each other.
See, I had an older female cousin who delighted in torturing me and excluding me from games and doing games that would like mess me up on purpose because she thought it was funny. Yeah. So, it's
interesting as well.
Which is not the relationship here.
Did you find though, as younger siblings, because I'm an eldest sibling.
Yeah.
Did you find that you identified more with the younger siblings or the older siblings? Or I suppose which sister did you most identify with?
I think there's some obvious ones here. So obviously for me, it is Joe.
Yeah.
And I know that is the cliched response.
Mm.
But
you are very Joe-like.
Yes.
Yeah.
I am the academic one. Mm. Yeah. I am the awkward one, the one who can't quite do social cues, the one who, you know, gets awkwardly asked out by friends. And I'm like, oh, what? No. Oh, God, no. Please don't look at me like
that. You've cut your hair short several times.
Cut my hair short. Yeah, I definitely related to that. Yeah. You know, I've run away to New York.
yeah.
So, and like also... So the thing that they don't do in this one, but the ending that they do in the more recent one, sort of hints that she wasn't meant to get with anyone at the end.
Right.
That it was this idea that the publishers made
the
author.
Which I really liked about the Greta Gerwig one.
I loved because it was this hint that, something that happened in real life is like, you have to marry your character off by the end. No one wants to read a story about woman who doesn't get married. So I quite liked that hinting at the ending that like Joe and Professor Bear getting together, even though I ship them getting together was only in the story within the book
and not an actually actual thing in the real world.
Oh, that's
of
quite
the
clever.
Film. Yeah. I think you'd enjoy watching the more recent version really now good. As well. It is very good.
We'll get to it one day. There's another International Women's Day coming right up in 12 months. So, but what I would say is what I really appreciated about this particular tale was the lack of, like, the emotive raw angst that's just the kind of like, no, I'm not talking clearly, so we're going to misunderstand each other for the next 20 minutes. Whereas in this, a lot of those misunderstandings are actually cleared up quite quickly, and their emotional complications felt more genuine. Like, you know, Friedrich at the end going, well, you know, you've gotten married.
Congratulations on your wedding. And she's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm not married.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. Like that was great. Same with as much as I'm like, well, Laurie's just bouncing around here till he finds one that he hooks in with. But I still quite liked his sort of desire to be part of the family.
Yeah.
Even though I'm like, okay, it's a bit weird. But
they're all really like well drawn characters. There's real kind of like one dimensional like, oh, you're a bit shit. I don't really like you.
I honestly thought Brooks was going to be worse. I thought he was going to be...
He's a bit awkward in this, but he's quite sweet.
But I thought, basically, because of so many of these, I'm normally expecting like a Mr. Collins type to turn up somewhere. And the fact there wasn't one was such a relief.
Well, that's the thing. It's not about that. It's about them growing up and going out into the world or not.
Romance is secondary.
It is.
Romance is secondary to the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, which is lovely.
And that's across the board. That's not just like within like their own personal stories and what they're doing. It's also in like the values that Mommy is reinforcing in them as well. And that idea, you know, when she's talking to Meg and she's like, you know, I worry that if you marry and just, you know, turn yourself into a shiny bauble for a rich man,
you'll
come to think that that's all that you are, and you're not. You're all of these other amazing things. And it's like, yes, thank you. Women are more than just attractive little fence posts that you stick hats on.
Insert the monologue from the Greta Gerwig one here.
Right? Yeah.
Honestly, Susan Sarandon has somehow managed for, I think, the second time in like 3 years to be probably the front runner for best mum of the year.
She's played some really good
mums. She's the best mum in Speed Racer. She's like, really good in Speed Racer. Her and... John Goodman, thank you, are the best mum and dad duo that I'd seen in a film for a long time. And here, we don't get to see a lot of Mr. March. Because
he's in two scenes.
Yeah, he's off at war. But at no point does it feel like, oh, he's an absent father or, oh, we don't like him. Like, he's absent because he's in a war for a lot
of
the story.
He's absent because he's in a war. And then he's kind of just, like, there in the background. But he's not the cornerstone of the family.
But
Mommy
also
is.
Because, like, his presence is still felt through all the letters and through all of the way that they engage socially, you know, with all of their values. You can see that coming through and coming from both of the parents.
Yeah.
How important it is that, you know, they are, you know, standing up against slavery.
Yeah.
And they are making, you know.
They're part of the temperance movement.
Exactly.
There's all these other things you get little hints at. And I got a lot more of like the historical context-y type stuff like that. Like the slavery stuff, I picked up a little bit on previous rewatches. The temperance thing I hadn't picked up until this time. And I was like, oh, shit. Oh, okay. Yep. No, that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah. You know, all those good charity values that they have.
Yeah. Mm. Looking after those who are less fortunate. Yeah. Like
Which,
lots of...
You know, sadly did lead to Beth's death indirectly.
Indirectly.
But it's also one of those things where they could have quite easily held anger for that baby
for the family.
That gave her the fever that would eventually
baby
kill her.
Baby was already dead.
And nope, they're never brought up. It's never like, those bloody immigrants coming over here with their diseases. Yeah. Like, no, never once. And I really just like the fact that they were true to their values.
Good people, yeah.
Yeah.
Just a good family, doing good things.
Yeah, so, you know.
And
that,
like, you know,
nice.
The rich people could have been real bastards as well.
Yeah,
they're not.
I was waiting for a bastard to turn up. I thought old Grandad Lawrence was
going to
be
Everyone thinks he's going to be, and then he's just a sweet, awkward old man. And that's another thing that annoys me about this version is you don't get the relationship between him and Beth. See,
they always
cut Beth.
You get more of that, again, in the Greta Gerwig one, which I think is really interesting.
Because
she
spends months going over to his house and
to play
playing
the piano.
And that's why he gives her the piano.
Mm. Yeah.
And so suddenly he gives her a piano.
Yeah, it would have been more emotionally impactful if we'd seen that. But also I get it's a 2-hour movie. How do you, what do you choose to cut? Particularly if you're going to be focusing on Joe.
It's interesting seeing the balance of the characters in these two different adaptations. And again, like the thing that I said at the beginning, obviously, was like, this is like a very traditional, like exactly as you said, linear, you know, this is the book, we're going to just put it up on the screen. Whereas the Greta Gerwig one is a lot more flashbacky and kind of out of sequence a little bit.
And they don't change actors even for Amy.
They don't change actors even for Amy.
Does Helen Mirren provide narration at any point in the Greta Gerwig Little Women? Is it? I've only seen Barbie of Greta Gerwig's films. Is it like
you're missing
Barbie?
Out? No.
Okay.
Rats. Who is Aunt March?
It's Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Meryl Streep is excellent. She's okay. as Aunt
yeah.
March.
Yeah, I mean, I must say, the performances in this, we haven't really touched on them much.
Oh, they're brilliant.
They're all...
It's such a good cast.
They're all at about the same level. Yeah, it's a very wonderful. Consistent cast.
And you get real sense from the very beginning with Mommy and, like, you know, with Hannah, but specifically with Mommy and with the four girls, they're just so touchy-feely, lovey, huggy, kissy.
Yeah.
It just feels very natural.
Yeah.
There's no, like, weird awkwardness.
No, there isn't. And, yeah, I mean,
it feels very loving.
Susan Sarandon's a fantastic actor. Like, we kind of expect that.
Kirsten Dunst is great. Claire Danes is great.
Yep.
Claire Danes is always great.
And Winona Ryder is awesome. Yeah,
Winona Ryder is, you know,
the lady who plays Meg, whose name I always forget because she's not done as much stuff.
Mm.
But she's great.
Yeah,
And she's lovely.
It is a very even... And maybe Christian Bale. He's a really good mix of, like, charming,
he's a good Laurie.
But like a bit of a vagabond. When he starts growing that goatee, it's...
You're like, oh, he's going down the bad path. He's a naughty boy. He's smoking a cigarette. He's hanging out with naughty
It is
ladies.
A little bit like, oh, that's a little bit tragic there.
It's his, like, his emo face.
You were thinking of Trini Alvarado.
Yeah.
Who was Meg.
She's great.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen her in anything else.
Hmm.
But she's really good in this.
And Gabriel Byrne as Friedrich is very strong as well.
He's good.
Trini was also in Peter Jackson's The Frighteners from 1996.
Cool.
Okay.
Haven't seen it.
Okay. Well, if you've not seen that, I'm going to suggest that you haven't seen Pawley, which looks like it's a film about a parrot.
Oh, I have seen Pawley.
What? You've seen Pawley?
Yes.
1998?
Yes.
Yeah, she's in that.
Is she? Oh my God. Yes, of course she is. Oh my God.
I
haven't watched that film probably since the late 90s.
I guess I know what's coming up for your 75th.
Oh man. Paulie's one of those late 90s animal
that we all saw.
Film things that were on all of the VHS.
Mm-hmm. There was ads at least on the VHSs when you were doing your fast forward.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of Paulie. I literally just picked the
That's on Australian.
Yeah.
Well, you hadn't heard of the Napoleon film, which is about the little golden retriever puppy in Australia who goes on a balloon ride. It's.
I'm still convinced you've made that up.
No, I really haven't. I really haven't. And that was another one. There was this whole string of them. It was after Milo and Otis, probably. And everyone was like, cute animal films. That sells. This is good for children. But yeah, Paulie is about the parrot. And yeah, so she's the grown-up version of the little girl who has the parrot at the beginning. And that little girl actress, she was in like a bunch of stuff around that time.
Okay, well, we've diverted.
Yeah, no, you're just throwing me back like 20 plus years.
The cast is very good though, like just across the board, performances are strong. I think the direction is good, but it's interesting in terms of some of those transitional shots. We were talking a bit about like that very long transition shot through the house.
That's lovely. And that's I brought it up at the time, but that's the sort of shot that they do in the 2005 Pride and Prejudice that makes me really like that one.
Yeah.
Because it is that let's use our set till its full extent.
Mm. And let's use that to tell the story
of the whole family in the background. They've all got their stuff that they're doing and they have to like a very complicated sort of movement with the camera involved that I just think makes it feel more natural.
Yeah. And that was great.
There was a walk and talk.
Yeah. Also, there's the other one as well, which is quite impressive, where they're at the top of the really grand staircase in the house. And they drop down a couple of levels. So the kid like spits out the grape or the gobstop or whatever it is. And then you go down another level and there's a bunch of little kids there like ditching things down. And then you go all the way down to the final layer of the thing.
And it's a big party.
It's this huge party, but all in the ballroom on the ground floor. And then you've got like another like 20 stories of stairs going up, so it gives you a sense of just how grand and spectacular this house is, but also you kind of see like the levels of like, you know, the people who are doing stuff.
I think ultimately this is a really good, well-made film, but I would be curious to see what the Greta Gerwig one is like now.
I think you'd like it
does feel very 1990s, which is not a criticism, but I would be interested to see what a different time period and different filmmakers would be interested in.
It's very different. It's
in making.
Yeah, it's very different, if nothing else, in terms of like the structure and the way that it's kind of like pieced together.
Mm.
Because Sarah and I watched the Greta Gerwig one last year because she said, oh, because I think it was like you sort of said, oh, I haven't seen the 90s one. And I said, oh, I haven't seen the recent one. You said, well, I've seen the recent one. And so we watched that together. No, we've watched this one. Oh, full circle moment. It's lovely.
Yeah.
Obviously, the film ends with three of the sisters, the surviving sisters, all married and together. Yeah. And, you know, Meg's had her twins. And everyone is like close, a little bit sad that
Aunt Marge has finally died.
Yeah, Aunt Marge has died. She's left that just happened.
She's left the house to Joe.
Yeah, that just was like, I was like, oh, did she die? Because it was kind of like
an old lady.
Yeah, no, I know.
Well, Amy couldn't come back because she was there looking after Aunt Arch.
I suppose.
That's because the one line that mentioned that you were talking.
Oh, well, I see. It's my fault. I'm a bad viewer, apparently.
Yes.
No, it is my fault. I'm okay.
But don't talk in films.
But it's so fun. But yes, it was. It just sort of ends.
It sort of wraps itself up really quickly.
I mean, when it ended, I was like, yes, that's the obvious point to end. But I wanted a little bit more.
That's because in other versions, there is a little bit more.
Oh, okay.
So in the miniseries especially, but also the Greta Gerwig film, there's scenes afterwards at the school when the school's up and running.
In the new house.
In the new house.
Yeah.
And you've got Amy, who's teaching them art.
Course.
You've got Meg, who's just kind of like looking after everyone, like chasing around all the kids. Most of them are hers. And then you've got Professor Bear and Joe, you know,
doing their thing.
And, you know, the whole family is there and they all teach kids together and it's mixed genders. What?
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, progressive.
Okay. Guys, okay, cool. I don't know if it'll catch on.
Education for women?
Definitely not in some schools.
Yes. It was, it was just really nice.
It's a nice film. Yeah. It's a nice film. It's got, like, good interpersonal drama, but not, like, drama for the sake of drama. Like, it's got good performances. It looks pretty.
So
It's just nice. It's a comfort film.
I'm going to bring up the obvious things from this film and book. The Amy, Joe, and Laurie stuff.
Yeah.
People have opinions.
Well,
I'm really not surprised.
I must
about
admit,
that.
During the first half, when Amy is obviously being played by a younger actor, and she has that really nice scene in the coach where she's like worried about never being kissed, and he just makes an offhand comment of, I'll make sure you get a kiss before you die. And at no point was I like, well, that's going to be a romantic relationship by the end of this film. And then it was. And I get that, obviously, if that's how it happened in the book and that's different from a film where you have actors and particularly like two actors playing the same role to show that time difference for one half of the relationship but not the other, it did feel a little bit like, I don't like it, was basically what it came
to. So interesting, because that scene in particular, I didn't mind so much because it reminded me, it was a very 90s sort of thing, I think, of just, you know, family friends.
Yeah.
And it very much, like, it didn't feel like a weird, creepy older dude preying on a younger girl. It just felt like, here's a family friend who's saying something sweet because that's what she needs to hear.
Christian Bale
plays it that way, I think.
It didn't when that scene took place.
Mm-hmm.
But now, given the context of what follows, it does feel a bit
like...
They
rushed the relationship a bit.
It did.
They do a bit more of that, again, in the more recent one. And I think that's probably partially people looking back being like...
I also think
Florence Pugh plays her all the way through.
Yeah.
She already is quite grown up.
And she gets a great monologue.
I also think it doesn't help that Laurie is, like, bouncing from sister to sister throughout this film.
Yeah.
Which, you know, he's like, I want to be part of this family. I'm like... cool, you can just hang out. Like, you don't have to marry into it.
Well, that's the thing, because he sort of meets Joe and they become like besties, and then he's out and about at the ball
with Meg
and people are like, oh, she's got her eyes on the Lawrence boy, and they're just like, no.
They're like, obviously we're siblings,
obviously, like. No,
but then he obviously has the proposal with Joe.
Yeah.
And she's
just
rightly,
like,
turns it down.
And she's just
Thank you.
Oh, no.
There are so many people who are like, oh, no, Joe and Laurie should have ended up together at the end. It's like, did you see the relationship I saw?
Yeah. They are so
and
much
I think,
better
and
as
I think the,
friends.
And I think the argument that she has there, where she's like, you know, we would just fight all the time. This is not a good match. We are going to kill each other. We will drive each other crazy.
Yeah.
It is not going to work out. Like, we are great as friends. Absolutely not as a married couple. No.
Yeah.
And I love
and she makes that very clear. And I'm like, yeah, girl.
I do like that he went, all right, I'm not going to pursue this again.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, that was like, okay, that's good. But then going for the sister,
yeah,
it's kind of like,
they needed more time with the two of them in Europe together.
Yeah, with Amy and
actually learning to fall in love as adults, because Amy has always had a crush on him.
Yeah,
yeah, from day one. Yeah. But like, it was a cute child crush.
I mean, she does refute him.
Yeah,
and he basically like, do better.
And that's so, why I love Amy. There's a lot of people who hate Amy, and I'm not sure it's because she ended up with Laurie or because when she was a kid she burnt Joe's book.
I mean, I'm still
She was a shitty little kid. I love Amy. Mm. She's a great character. Like, controversial take, but I think she's an excellent character because, yeah, kids do that. They kids fight. They make stuff, dumb mistakes. They destroy each other's and belongings. And
I love Kirsten's delivery in this when she comes in where Mommy is, like, stroking Joe's hair and she's like, it is a terrible loss. Like, you know, this is an awful thing. And, like, she's, you know, justified. And then you just see little Amy come in and she's standing in the back and she just says in the smallest little voice, sorry, Joe. And then she walks up. Oh my,
she's so cute.
She's so sweet. And it's like, you can tell that she really feels bad about it.
Yeah. And she is, as you're saying, she's a great character.
Yeah.
Because she's a little girl. She becomes made a mistake.
This young woman who's, you know, in France and has this opportunity which Joe never got. And it looks like she's actually taken it because she stands up for herself. She's doing all the artistic stuff really well, really engaging with it. It's a great environment for her. But the fact she says, yeah, go away and do better. And and he does.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, okay, at the very least, there's like groundwork for off-screen stuff there for it to be like, it's not a complete shock when he turns up like, and we got married.
Yeah.
It's still a bit Lydia and Captain What's-His-Face.
Except Lydia runs away after Wickham and
you.
Is like, oh, you're leaving? Lydia, well, let's go like have sex together.
Yeah, it basically
Lydia
like,
is like if baby Amy tried to go off.
Yeah, this is like the healthier version of that. Even though it's not exactly the same.
Yeah.
But it's the main point of reference that I have. So
yeah. It is a little icky that he goes after another sister after stuff, but also
I'm like I am worried that if she turned him down he'd just be like trying to bring Beth back from the dead or something. Like, it was he'd murder
his ex-tutor
and so unimaginative he can't think of another.
But also, like, as well, I feel like I know so many women who have been in that situation where you've got a guy who you're really great friends with and then they're like, oh, but like more, and you're like, no, oh no, 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 oh god, no. And it just completely destroys the friendship.
Yeah.
It just completely destroys it and it's awful. And it's like, did they only just see me as a sexual object?
The answer is yes, according to the people I've turned down.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And the nice thing about this, I think, is that even though she turns him down and she's like, no, is the fact that he takes the no and he goes, wow, like, I'm really heartbroken about this because he's obviously got a big flame for her.
Mm.
But he's like, that's a me problem, not a you problem. Yeah, I'm going to deal with it
exactly,
my way.
Which is so much healthier. Yeah. Modern men, please take note. This is how you do the thing. I mean, don't go off and marry his sister, maybe. That's a bit weird. But like, respecting the decision and being like, okay, you don't think this is a feasible thing? Cool. I'm going to respect your, like, I'm going to respect your opinion on this. I'm going to respect your point of view. And I'm sorry for making it weird.
Yeah.
Like, Good man, Laurie. Well done.
Hmm. Would you like some trivia about the film Little Women?
I would love
some trivia.
All of this trivia comes from IMDb, so if it's not true, don't blame me. Actually, just before we get into the trivia, having just done that introduction, a little shout out here for Gillian Armstrong, who is, of course, the director of this film, female director and Australian director,
should
be pointed out as well. It is one of the films that she's best known for, along with My Brilliant Career and Mrs. Sofal. She's also a member of the Order of Australia.
And still
kicking around at the age of 73.
Good on ya.
And that's everything I read on Wikipedia before. but also, you know, we do like to look at films which are, for International Women's Day, which are focused either on women or were made by women. And this was both. So well done on
it. It's a really important
criteria.
Model. One day a year, it's great to be a woman.
We do other films, I should point out. It's just, for me, it's very much a case of, oh, this is the time of the year where we really like focus in and go, look, isn't this nice? Wouldn't it be nice if more than, say, one of the 10 films that were nominated for Best Picture this year were directed by a woman? Not that it should always be a gender parity thing, but just, it'd be nice if maybe, you know, it happened a little bit more.
A little bit more. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, sorry. I'll get off that soapbox now. Thank you.
No, please stay on the soapbox. We need more
stuff. It's very high up here. And someone will need soap. Okay. So, trivia. Winona Ryder introduced Christian Bale to his future wife on this film. Sibby Blazich. She was Winona Ryder's personal assistant at the time.
Oh, that's nice.
And he's like, can't be with you, I'll be with your PA.
Your sister, PA, what? Mm.
This was Claire Danes' feature film debut.
Mm.
And she's very
I didn't know that.
But Claire Danes, her hair did actually catch on fire in this film. When she was carrying a candle up the stairs during filming. So,
well, we did have those fire safety concerns as we were watching.
Yeah, those Christmas
with
candle
the, with
scenes.
The curling tongs, yeah.
Yeah, they were making me feel very, very...
nervous.
Yeah, nervous. At the end credits for this film, the film is dedicated to two people, one of whom is Polly Hannah Klass, who was a 12-year-old girl who was kidnapped from her California home in 1993, and was later found murdered. Winona Ryder, much of whose youth was spent in Petaluma, which was where Polly Klass lived, joined in the highly publicized search efforts and made several emotional appeals for the child's safe return. So that's why it was included as part
Winona
of this.
Winona Ryder, you're such a good human being. Mm. And she still is.
Yes.
Aww.
The set designer patterned the interiors for the house after the layout of Orchard House, which was Louisa May Alcott's family home in Concord, Massachusetts.
That's right. Nice. Makes sense.
That's the house that she lived in when she was writing the book that would become the film, that would become the book in the film.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So
yeah,
meta.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's very meta.
This is the third screen version to be Oscar nominated of Little Women.
There was a black and white one.
But it was never nominated in the same category. So the first Little Women was made, it was released in 1933, and it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, and it did win Best Adapted Screenplay.
Nice.
Little Women 1949 was nominated for Best Art Direction / Set Direction Color and Best Cinematography Color, which it won. And this 1994 version was nominated for Best Actress for Winona Ryder, Best Costume Design, and Best Original Score. It did not win for any of the three.
What about the more recent one?
I don't know. What I do know, because I pulled this up, is the reason it didn't win Best Original Score is because it was up against The Lion King.
That'll do it.
Fair, yeah.
And the reason it didn't win Best Costume was because it was up against The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. So,
yeah, that's...
So it was...
That makes it a bit hard. How can you beat the thong dress?
Well, exactly. So...
how can you beat that?
Yeah, so...
Aussie fan favourites.
Yeah, a little unlucky there for 1994's Little Women. 2019's Little Women received 6 nominations, including Best Picture, Best Actress... For Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan.
Oh, there it is. Sorry. I was like, who's Ronan? I was like, yeah, it's Saoirse Ronan.
She's the Irish actress who does a lot of really
good
shit.
I know that. It was just because it said Ronan. I was confused because it was just the surname. Best Supporting Actress for Pew, which I now know means Florence Pugh.
Oh, we just watched her in another film today.
Yeah. We saw June Part 2 today. Long story short, it's the same. If you like June 1, you'll like June 2. Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Original Score, it won one. For Best Costume Design. So it did get that Costume Design Oscar eventually.
Costumes were very good in it. That's true.
They were very good in this, but...
Oh, yeah.
But Priscilla, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little unlucky.
How
there.
Can you beat the rhinestones and the glitter and the feathers?
No, exactly, yeah.
How can you?
You can't. And they didn't. Some of the actors who auditioned for the role of young Amy March included a young Natalie Portman.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And a young Christina Ricci.
Yeah, makes sense.
I believe I knew those too. Mm. Yep. Nailing this.
Reese Witherspoon was considered to play both the young and the adult Amy due to her short height, in much the same way that Florence Pugh was in the later version. But it was decided that it didn't work to have the same actress play the two separate timeline roles. The role of Professor Bayer was also auditioned for by Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Joe, I just have to say that, well...
He was too busy doing Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah. And John Turturro.
Don't know who that is.
He was in that famous anime. John Turturro, Turturro, John Turturro, Turturro. Nope.
That does not help me.
Barton Fink Fading Gigolo, Oh Brother Where Art Thou, Quiz Show. He looks like this. For those at home, I've just pulled up his IMDb picture.
My vision is not that good.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. I don't know who that is.
You might have seen
I've
him.
I've probably seen him. I've seen Oh Brother Where Art Thou on a few other things.
He's a very good actor. He probably would have done a good job in that role.
He looks like the right sort of look.
I like Gabriel Byrne in the role. Like, I think he does very well, but yeah.
Good age, good acting.
Yeah. Hugh Grant...
Hugh Grant putting on a German accent.
I think he would have been a bit... because there should be that clear delineation of age between them. Yeah, because
he's the older professor.
Yeah, I don't think it works if he's literally about to be in Notting Hill. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
For her role as Jo, Winona Ryder was fully wigged. For her natural hair was croc short at the production time. No, that was a couple of years later.
That was a couple of years later, yeah.
Do you wear wigs?
Will you wear wigs? When will you wear wigs?
She
was rocking a pixie cut for a lot of the 90s.
Mm. It remains a mystery why this movie was rated PG and not G. The MPAA description describes two scenes of strong language, but still there is no swearing in this movie.
Don't say blessed and rich.
Or anything inappropriate for a family audience. Rumour has it that the studio pressured the MPAA to rate it PG for box office and marketing reasons, so this could be sold to a teenage girl audience. The MPAA complied, even though this is really a G-rated movie. Curiously, Little Women 2019 was also rated PG-13, but that had a scene of a woman giving birth topless from behind. So that one maybe had grounds
to be PG.
Yeah, to be that bit more.
I don't remember that scene.
Mm.
I vaguely remember that
scene. Blocked it out. I've only seen it once. I need to watch it again.
In the scene where Beth visits the Hummels, Claire Danes is on the verge of crying when she holds the wailing baby.
Yeah.
In the film, you can see her bottom lip quivering.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The director, Gillian Armstrong, yelled cut, obviously because she could see this. Danes' mother was on set and remarked, "Well, that was great for the picture," end quote. So.
Okay, so even though I've never seen this version of the film before, I think I have walked in on it a few times because as soon as her lips started quivering,
you were like, "I know this. I've seen this."
It's another Beth scene as well. When she's dying,
yeah.
I went, "Oh, I've heard her say that line in that way before."
Yeah.
So I was like, "Oh, some sort of core memory happening there."
Yeah. Yeah.
Something you may not have noticed is that because why would you? Is that the Columbia Pictures logo that's seen in this film was the 1993 to 2006 version. So you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. Of course they'd use that. It was made in that time. But they would bring back the Columbia Pictures logo for one film in 2019.
For Little Women?
They brought it back for Little Women in 2019. Correct,
they did.
Yeah.
I did notice that.
You did notice that?
Yeah.
Oh, what? Well, blow me down.
I know all your trivia.
Yeah, we know what Paulie is. We know my trivia. The mysteries are unraveled.
Look, I'm on Tumblr and
okay,
Little Women.
We
comes
are
up
on
a
the
lot.
Internet. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. That is fair. I forgot about Tumblr.
I couldn't have told you any of this off the cuff though.
No.
So it's just a nice reminder.
There you go. There you go. Costumes are handed down from older sisters to younger to underline the family's poverty and the connections between sisters. So Jo's red plaid dress worn to the ball where she meets Laurie is worn the following Christmas by Beth when she comes down the stairs after being ill.
Yep.
Jo and Beth were close to each other, obviously, as Meg and Amy were also close to each other. So Meg's blue striped dress that she doesn't end up wearing to Sally Moffat's debut ball is worn by Amy when she announces she's going to Europe. If I can be perfectly honest... The man watching did not notice that those clothes were being shared.
I've never actually noticed that the tartan dress got handed down specifically between those two or was, you know, being shared between them. But the blue dress, absolutely, it's quite striking. It's what sisters do. I mean, steal each other's shit.
I'm afraid, I did not notice that.
Sometimes it's the clothes or the tequila.
Mm.
Yep.
Sarah took the tequila.
Mm.
And on that note, it's time to score the film.
Yeah.
Sarah, it was your first time watching Little Women 1994 edition.
It was.
What score would you give it out of 10?
Oh, okay. I'm trying to think of my object that I'm going to use for scores. I would give it 8.5 Beth's doll out of 10.
Mm. Covered in little scarlet petals.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a little insensitive considering she died of scarlet fever.
It was Did you say pebbles or petals?
Petals. Petals.
You said pebbles. I was like, pebbles? Like fish rocks out of a friggin' aquarium. Just
Liking everything everywhere all at once.
Mm.
What about yourself, Ellen?
Yeah, I think it's... I'm probably on a pretty similar sort of
page, like an 8 or 8.5. I'm going to give it 8 terrible high heels out of the rag bag out of 10.
Do you think anyone will notice?
Of course not.
That, well, they did when she sprained her ankle on it.
She was showing her ankle to everyone. Oh my. Mm.
Yeah,
he put snow on it with his own hands.
I really enjoyed this film.
It's good.
I do think it is showing its age a little bit, and that's yeah. both a good thing and maybe in a couple of places not a good thing. It's really lovely, though.
It's a nice film.
I would definitely watch more adaptations of Little Women.
I have so many of them.
Well, yes. Yeah, it was really fun. It was lovely. The performances are good. I love Winona Ryder. I love seeing her. She's so good.
For a second, I thought you were going to say, I love women.
Yeah. No, that...
We know.
Because that would make me sound like an American presidential candidate. I really enjoyed this film. I thought performances were the most spectacular thing about it. The score is very good by Thomas Newman.
Thomas Newman's great.
It's really good.
It's pretty.
Yeah. It's a little... It's a rainy Sunday afternoon film.
It is. It's a nice little schmaltzy...
Yeah.
But, Stephen, it's Saturday.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess we'll have to watch it again tomorrow. But it, for me, yeah, for me, it's... it reminded me a lot of The Piano, the New Zealand film, which was a much darker film exploring the role of women in this sort of time period. And also, it doesn't quite reach the heights of The Piano, but The Piano is outstanding. It's almost not fair to be trying to compare it to that. This is very good, though.
It's a very comforting film. It's the kind of thing you sit down in an afternoon like, you ought to watch. Oh, watch this. This is a nice film.
Oh, yeah, I'd watch this ahead of The Piano for comfort, 100%.
And I think it's nice because there's like, you know, there's a bit of sad. There's some good, nice, fun times.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I would give this 7.5 missing gloves out of 10.
He took the glove.
Found in Mr. Brooks' place.
Mr. Brooks. Look, I loved her reaction to like all of the romantic shit because that is me.
That brings us to the end of this episode, though. Dr. Ellen, Dr. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of the Cinema Catch-Up Club.
Thanks. Dr. Stephen, thanks for having us.
And thank you for joining in. Just at the end of the episode, here's a little update on things for you all. This is going to be the last of the regular releases until the arrival of Baby Platt.
Say it ain't so.
I'm saying it is so. I'm sorry.
Yep. Sorry.
Yeah, Baby Platt is imminent. Due.
How could you, Ellen?
I know.
Sending feminism back.
I know.
And so because of that, we're stopping here because, you know, babies can turn up at any time. And as I learned from this film, sometimes they're twins.
I bloody hope not.
Yeah, we're pretty confident this is just a singular baby plot. But just on the off chance, we are going to be beginning our little hiatus for childbirth and rearing from this episode. So we will be back later in the year. There will still be some content going up in our hiatus, specifically our Star Wars episode, which has not been recorded as yet, but will be going out in early May.
Ready for May the 4th.
Ready for May the 4th, indeed. So that one will be going out because that will be in the middle of our hiatus period. The intention is that we will come back middle of the year-ish, see how things are going. And when we come back, we will notify you all. But how will we notify you all? I don't have your personal emails.
Well, you got mine.
Well, I've got yours. But for everyone else...
You have the Patreon emails.
Well, that's true. But we'll get to them in a second. Yeah. I'm going to have to ask you to meet me halfway, listener. If you subscribe to our Facebook page, give it a like, a follow. You'll get news and updates about the program there. If you subscribe to this program through iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, you will get programs as and when they release. So you know, if suddenly episodes start turning up, you'll be like, oh, I guess Stephen got tired of the baby, he's back to watching films again.
Or the baby already knows how to talk and is a special guest star.
Well,
yeah. we have had babies on the program before.
That's
not
true.
For a while, but we have.
Yes. Oh, there's no joke I can make there that won't offend anybody, so I'm not gonna
don't say it's
anything. Me, I'm the baby.
Yes. So that's the case. And as Dr. Ellen mentioned, we do have a Patreon. Patrons will be getting some additional bonus content during the hiatus. And if you want to know what it is, you're gonna have to become a Patreon yourself.
What?
Yeah, I know. So but luckily you can join up for as little as $1 a month. Mammy March would be like, you know what, that's a good investment. Even in their troubled financial situation, she'd be like, yeah, we can afford this. This is better than limes. So
that's what we should
limes are not. Limes are not good currency.
No, but podcast content is. So yes, if you want to get access to that bonus features, go to patreon.com/CCUC podcast and enjoy as that stuff is released. But that is all for this episode, and until we return, look after yourselves, and I look forward to talking about movies with you all in the near future. Until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.
You're one beauty.
That was one of the lines that just made you laugh out loud, which was just so delightful. That's such a shitty yoga sibling.
You have been listening to a Thought Jar Productions podcast. For more information, please visit thoughtjarproductions.com.